Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald and Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout the D.C. metropolitan area and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we are talking with Deborah Fazier-Smith, a plaintiff's attorney for 37 years. Deborah has been voted one of the best lawyers in America for more years than I can count. She has been on the Maryland Daily Record's Top 100 Women list and the Daily Record's Leader in the Law. Deborah is the editor of Maryland's Automobile Accident and Desk Book. She sits on the Maryland Senate and House Oversight Committee on Workers' Compensation. And Deborah, I'm proud to say, is my law partner, and she is the chair of Joseph Greenwald and Lake's Workers' Compensation and Injury Group. Today, Deborah, I'm really excited for this discussion because I know we're talking about some timely things. So welcome aboard. I'm so glad to have you back.
It's so nice of you to have me.
Well, so let's first go out to the West Coast, okay? And let's talk about how workers' compensation has made some headlines out in Hollywood. And I'd like to start first, if it's okay with you, with one of my favorite TV shows, Yellowstone. As a, you know, you just can't stop watching Yellowstone. If you're a male, you have a big crush on Beth Dutton. If you're a female, it could be any number of guys. But I love Yellowstone. But Yellowstone's been in the news for another reason, hasn't it?
Yes, and I am a diehard fan of Kevin Costner, very much so. But this doesn't really involve him. And I want to tell you, I have no personal knowledge whatsoever about these facts or circumstances. I'm just reviewing what I see in the press. But it's rare that we see workers' comp as a headline.
Right, yeah, I was shocked.
For Hollywood, very rare, but I thought I'd touch base on it. Miss Kilchner, K-I-L-C-H-E-R, I'm not sure how I pronounce it. Miss Kilchner has appeared on, I think, 4 episodes of Yellowstone. And before that, she appeared on another TV show where she claims that she was injured, I think her neck and shoulder. And she never filed for comp, is my understanding, after that initial injury, but she did play the series on Yellowstone. A few days after Yellowstone, I believe she applied. She was interviewed by a physician, according to the California standards, and said that she was unable to work due to those injuries and was, in fact, granted what we call temporary total disability benefits. Those are benefits that you receive that are considered temporary because it's supposed to be when you're off work and treating, unable to work at all, to be distinguished against permanent benefits, which is once you have reached your plateau. So what I can surmise is that now, after she claimed over $90,000 in lost wages benefits, they are looking back and saying, wait a minute, the physician said in the newspaper that had he known she had worked on Yellowstone, he would not have awarded or agreed that she was disabled.
Okay. And so Deborah, she's saying that she was hurt on the set. Is that essentially what her claim is? She was hurt while
probably
she was working.
Probably hurt while the filming. Yes. Filming.
Okay.
And so I think it brings a couple questions because the period that she's claiming her temporary total disability, she wasn't working. The period that she was injured was before the Yellowstone series. So I don't see where, unless she out and out lied and said, you know, have not worked, which is impossible for me to imagine because people knew she was on Yellowstone. How do you hide that? Then they must have known that she thought her condition got worse over time, which happens a lot, and now she was unable to work. So I'll be interested to see how that pans out.
That's very that's interesting. So in terms of where as far as you can tell, I understand you're just reading what the rest of us can read, although you're reading it with a much more educated eye. So she applied, and was she given these benefits? And then the insurance company is looking to somehow claw them back?
Yes, now she's being indicted for fraud.
That's not a good thing, right?
Yeah, and there's another interesting case in Hollywood right now. The famous case Rust. Of Rust.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw also, again, just reading from the newspapers, that there's a lawsuit being brought against Baldwin and the studio of Rust for her death. Very sad. However, guess what the defense is? Workers' comp is the exclusive remedy.
So let's talk about that. Why would that be? I mean, you know, let's say whether it's you know, on the set of Rust, or, and I do want to hear more about that, but also, why would that be in any circumstance? If I'm hurt at the job, why am I why do I have to only go and try to get benefits from workers' comp?
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of people probably don't realize. Let's say you were working in a pizza parlor, and someone comes in and robs the pizza parlor and shoots you in the foot on the way out, right?
Yeah.
So you have the right, in Maryland at least, to file workers' comp as well as to go after the, quote, defendant. Not that you'll probably get anything out of a robber, but... the same thing would happen if you were working, driving a truck and you were hit by another driver. You would be able to take workers' comp and sue the other driver. In this particular case, I think it's going to be a matter of whether the shooting was deemed accidental. Mm-hmm. Because if it's just an accident on the job, I would think workers' comp is the exclusive remedy. If there was any kind of... I would say co-employee statute in California, which I'm not aware if you could still sue a co-employee. In Maryland, you can, for negligence. So it would have to be whether it rose to a certain level. So it'll be very interesting to see that. But anyway,
can I ask you a little bit more about that? Because I know people are interested in Hollywood stuff. So if I'm, let's start with here in Maryland, I'm working in that pizza parlor, and I get hurt on the job as a result of either a coworker's negligence or my employer's negligence, whatever it may be, right? And so I can file a worker's compensation claim to recover or to compensate me for my injuries, right? At least in Maryland, you can do that.
Yes.
All right, but am I precluded then from saying, well, hold on a second, I should also be able to file a lawsuit for negligence against my employer or against my co-employee as agent or servant or employee of my employer?
Right. Well, depending on the facts, there's different scenarios. If, in fact, you are simply driving, let's say you have two buses that operate for a company and one bus hits the other bus. So you, as a driver of the first one, can file workers' compensation. And in Maryland, it allows you to file a negligence claim against the co-employee driver for negligence. And usually the employer's liability picks up on that and then gets indemnified.
So in other words, I can't collect. I can't double dip, right? I mean, is that
you'll
kind of
have to pay back a lien, yeah,
from the compensation. So if I get money as a result of the workers' compensation claim, then I get money as a result of my lawsuit, I may have to pay all or some of the money that I got from the workers' compensation claim back.
Right. Statutorily, okay, There's a lien, but you know, in our office, we're very good in negotiating those liens.
Okay. Do you think that this is also the same? Is it, as far as you know, is the law the same in California? And is it possible that the family of this deceased woman would be able to pursue that lawsuit against Mr. Baldwin?
Well, that's what I'm really waiting to see, how they rule, how it's going to go, because I'm not sure. You know, this whole conversation about assault versus negligence kind of segues you into
our next topic. Right. Yeah. So we move closer to home. And we know we've been reading a lot about how students can be protected in schools with the horrific number of shootings and various other things and how we can protect our students. But there's another class of folks that need protections, I would think also, right? Our teachers.
And so
tell me a little bit about how, if at all, teachers can be protected when it comes to claims and so forth in schools.
Well, David, this one is really close to my heart because I've been representing teachers most of my career for the past almost four decades. And, you know, the teachers, just like all the public servants that we must admire, you know, from us representing public safety to hospital workers, the teachers also, I think, are now put at a difficult, very difficult situation. They dealt with the pandemic, which was horrific for everyone, the students, the parents, the teachers. But what I'm seeing now, and I just read a very interesting statistic, apparently we have almost 4 million teachers, let's say 3 point something in the country. And 6% annually, approximately, is what the statistic said, are being assaulted. That's a big number.
Is that by students or primarily by students, I assume?
Well, that statistic was overall, so it didn't have a breakdown. But let's assume there are two types of assaults teachers can have. What I see in my practice a lot of times are these two types. One is an assault at random, just maybe even a parent who is frustrated, or a very bad student. The second one, which is more interesting in the sense of trying to resolve it, is when a very dedicated teacher who works with special needs is assaulted, what I would say, incidentally, never really on purpose, by a student that a teacher is really dedicated to help. And those teachers, to me, have the hardest time dealing with this because they love their students and they're upset that an incident happened. You know, a lot of them are very bad. Like if they're strong kids, the teachers suffer concussions and major ramifications. We have several of these cases right now in our office. And so we rush to get them immediate help, whether it's psychological, the concussion clinics, as fast as possible to let them debrief and let them feel that it's okay to be angry. And it's not the child's fault. It's not their fault. But workers' comp, because it's there, because we can rush to get help, is the best remedy on that.
So to focus on a specific, and I want to drill into that area that you just talked about. So I'm a teacher in a public school system, and I have a class of special needs kids, and you know, let's assume that this runs the gamut, you know, of kids who are behaviorally challenged, maybe on the autism spectrum, and various other illnesses. So one of my kids, you know, turns around and whacks me with his backpack or picks up something in a globe or whatever it may be in the classroom and hits me. And I'm injured as a result of that. So what can I then do following what you just outlined? What can I then do to help myself?
Well, immediately should consult someone, because we can go right into, you know, fast mode to get you the treatment that you need immediately. Some schools, believe it or not, have something called assault leave that has to be filed within 24 to 48 hours, in addition to workers' comp, which gives you more benefits, more of a full salary situation. So there are things you need to know right away. And of course, you're not feeling well, so you're not the one that's going to be the one who knows what to do with yourself. Especially if you have a closed head injury, you don't know that you have a closed head injury. Yeah. So you need to get help, and do not feel like you are doing anything against that child. Nobody will fault you for seeking help for yourself and taking the time that it takes to recover.
Teachers in a difficult spot, right? I mean, teachers are trained, and my daughter is a teacher on a local public school system, are trained what they can and can't do in terms of disciplining children and so forth. And so they're restricted in a lot of ways in how they can defend themselves, right, in certain circumstances.
That is so true. And that is the hardest part of seeing what goes on, because I've seen situations where a student who kept assaulting the people around him, whether it was a paraprofessional, an aide, or the teacher, and the teachers could not get him removed because he had a special IEP. He had the right to be in that school system. And there was a very difficult situation in the classroom with him. So yes, I think the best thing to do is follow workers' comp in that scenario. And then of course there's assaults. You know, I had, for example, you know, if a child is on a school bus creating a problem and a teacher is trying to help the bus driver, sometimes parents get involved and get into these assault situations. So I think teachers are put in a very, very tough spot. And I like to do whatever I can to help.
Yeah, I kind of worry a little bit that you're going to be faced with even more challenges as time goes by with the recent Supreme Court decision as to, you know, conceal and carry weapons and so forth.
Right.
And certain states are very lenient, right, in terms of who can carry weapons and where they can carry them.
And right.
I got to anticipate that maybe 6 months or a year from now, you and I are going to be having another discussion about someone using a firearm in school and whether that falls into the comp statute, or whether it's something else, or, you know, it's just, I mean, it seems to me
tragic.
It seems to me that it could be coming down the pike in your world if a lot of folks have their way around the country.
Yeah, I see that there's some movement sometimes that some educators asked that they want to carry, you know, themselves.
And
I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. You're right. We'll see down the road what's going to happen.
Another episode. Well, hopefully not another episode, but
we'll, right.
Okay. So now I want to go back a little bit. We talked about this area of your expertise in this area of comp law once before, and I want to talk a little bit more about the gig economy, drivers, and so forth, and how that's developed since we talked last. So if you would first remind everybody what that means, and then let's talk a little bit about it.
All right, sure. Briefly, this is something that I believe is a huge paradigm shift in our economy, its socioeconomic differences across the board, and that is this gig economy. In other words, platforms, apps, where you contract for drivers, where you contract for handiwork, anything that's now in flux as to, are you an employee or are you an independent contractor?
Okay.
So at this point in time, we were following you listeners had watched the other podcasts, we were very much interested in following what was happening in California in the Uber front, because that's where Uber was founded. And there was a referendum that Uber spent millions of dollars on to win, and they did. And it said that they were exempt from being the employee, their drivers were. And then this went to court, and it's still in the courts. The referendum was challenged. And as I read recently, there's about $8 million on the table, $800 million, some figure that they're trying to settle and resolve with. And as of now, they haven't. But in the meanwhile, as far as I know, unless it was this morning, but in the meanwhile, Massachusetts, I guess what I'm trying to say is that different states are trying to grapple with the situation on their own. At one point, the Biden administration had tried to pass something through the House that would say that these people were employees, but it died in the Senate. And so it's each state still is trying to grapple with the definition. And what Massachusetts did is they tried to put on the ballot something that I had mentioned in our prior podcast, that perhaps a hybrid model would really work, where there was still taxes being paid into that state economy, but the gig platforms would be able to say that they were independent contractors, and yet they would still be able to get workers' comp benefits by paying into the system. So Massachusetts said, hey, that might be a good idea. Let's try to put a referendum together to make a hybrid model. Well, as soon as they did, there was an uproar, because apparently the language in the proposed referendum also defined those drivers, let's say for Uber, as a certain type of driver, so that they couldn't be sued if they had an auto accident and hit somebody, or the company couldn't be sued. Uber couldn't be sued. So there was liability issues, because they said that the referendum defined the driver in the context of how they would relate to other people in the world and not just themselves.
I see.
And the court agreed and struck down the referendum, that it could not go on the ballot.
Interesting. So does it, why does it matter? Let's just make, ask you a really, give you what's a really softball question for you, but not so much for the rest of us. Why does it matter to me if I'm a, driver, DoorDash, Uber, Lyft, whatever I may be, why does it matter to me whether I'm an employee or an independent contractor? Why do I care?
Why would you care? Well, yeah. I think the most.
I told you it was an easy one, but I'm.
I think it's a very broad one.
Yeah, that's. I know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's important. It's very important, and that's why this issue is very dear to me. I believe that number one, if we allow the gig economy to define who these people are, they're going to end up losing in the end, one way or another, whether it's benefits for them or their family, or whether it's being able to control the driver's work a little bit more, even so they're not called employee. Because see, the whole issue is, if someone gets hurt, who's going to pick up the tab?
Right.
And the other issue is always follow the money trail. The government doesn't want to give up payroll taxes.
Interesting. So, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So really, you know, the gig economy wants to run its business, make a lot of money, not have the responsibility as a regular employer. They claim they could never run what they do having that kind of payload.
Right.
You know, it just wouldn't be possible. That's what they claim. I don't really know. I'm an by the way, I'm an advocate of the gig economy. I believe it's a positive force, and it should be, but it has to be somehow shaped by all the parties involved.
Okay.
I don't think it should be unilaterally, this is how we're going to do it.
Okay.
And I think that the drivers themselves are torn, because they want the flexibility and the ability to have this kind of position where they're self-employed. But they also want protections. They want it both ways.
Yeah.
And I think we can do it. If we do it the right way, I think it can be done.
Very interesting. Well, I'd be interested to know how this all develops down the road with you. And I'm hopeful that you'll find your way back on to talk more about all of these things. And we've been across the country in this 20 or 25 minutes that we've been together, Deborah. And as usual, the information that you provide to folks is invaluable. And people, if you're out there, particularly if you're a teacher, Deborah has enormous background experience working and helping teachers. And we all know, those of us who have had kids, right, who've raised kids, we know how important teachers are in their lives. Now, Deborah, if folks want to get a hold of you to talk about any of these issues, or workers' comp, or any type of an injury issue, what's the best way for folks to get you?
Whatever works best for them, they can email me at my three initials, dfs@jgllaw.com, or they could call me at 443 370 0222, and you can text on that as well.
All right. Terrific. Again, thank you so much, Deborah, for showing up. We look forward to having you back. Thanks to everyone out there for listening in, and we hope you join us for our next episode. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.